I'm thinking about in my own personal life where I see the biggest lack of etiquette. And I think that this is on an airplane. Where would you place it, Dr. Lee? I feel like the airplane is where everyone just, all bets are off. You're looking up and down the aisle. People are playing, you know, loud music from their phone. They're eating a sandwich from the thing next. I mean, they need to watch your channel, Dr. Lee, everybody.
And the other one I would recommend is exude something that the Japanese called ikigai. This is the way of life. So do something that you're good at. Do something that you love. Do something that people will want. And from that particular type of work, people will pay you for it. So if you can find that, everything you do is really an extension. It's not something false.
Dr. Lee, thanks so much for joining. I have seen your videos pop up on my feed more than a few times. And it's one of those things that in my own skits, I sort of accidentally use etiquette, putting others first. I was curious, how do you define etiquette?
So the words manners and etiquette are used interchangeably. And manners is the way we interact with one another. Etiquette is that set of generally accepted social mechanisms that we would use in a particular social group or social situation. So for example, if you are playing golf, there's a certain manner in which you would behave. You would keep quiet when someone was going to hit the ball, you know, when they're teeing it up to drive off. Or if you're sailing, there's certain etiquette, you know, you would listen to the captain. You wouldn't wear dark-soled shoes. That's etiquette.
Sure.
But
sure.
That's a sort of subset of manners. So manners is really the essence, as you had mentioned during your question. It allows us to interact with one another singularly or as a group in a seamless manner. Yet we have those pillars of respect, courtesy, and kindness. And does it change? Of course it changes. I mean, you can't expect one particular practice to be used universally. However, there is the please and thank you. Mm. So, yes, that's how I would define it.
In a world where we... I love those pillars. A world with respect, courtesy, and kindness is a higher functioning, higher output world from a business standpoint, from a relationship standpoint. So it's hard to know where etiquette begins and ends. It veers into business. It veers into friendly relationships. It veers into romance. It's consuming. Because when I think we all know when we get it wrong, what happens and how awkward it can be. And I'm not talking about just, you know, choosing the wrong fork or the wrong knife or the wrong wine glass, but a lot of DMs that I get are, hey, I'm new at my company. I'm surrounded by folks that are more senior. How do I act? How do I put my best foot forward? And to me, that's an etiquette. That's as equally an etiquette question as it is a business question.
In my opinion, it would all stem from you as an individual. How do you respect yourself? How do you want to portray your level of kindness and your level of consideration towards others? And that really is instilled within us from a very young age. Those pillars, how you hold a knife or a fork, whether you open the door for a particular person, whether you say please or thank you, those are extensions. Now, I know there are those that would say, well, I wasn't brought up that way. Well, that may be true, but please and thank you are universal. That's what I found. And if you are talking about the business world, the sense of the business world is it doesn't have compartments in terms of etiquette, not just the business or the personal. It's a continuum. You might take a detour into the business world. So how do you greet someone? Would you shake their hand with a firm grip and look them in the eye, which is quite common in the Western concept? But in the Eastern concept, certainly in Asia, they don't look you in the eye. And that's not being shifty. That's being polite. And they don't grip you in a sort of vice-like handshake. That's not considered polite. Some people don't even shake your hands. Now, if you would say on a personal basis, even a romantic basis, how many flowers do you give? Would you give a certain color? Would you give a certain type? These are really the finer details, which are very important, as you said. You know when you haven't carried out or followed what is the accepted etiquette for that particular situation. So in essence, you know, etiquette itself, it starts with you. How do you want to be treated yourself? Would you like someone to be kind to you? Would you like someone to say, please, would you pass me this, or excuse me, or would you like someone to say thank you? And sure. I think if you use that as your own standard, I've not met anyone who doesn't appreciate good manners.
I love
it's
that.
It's just human nature.
I love it because you also have to guess a lot less, right? You say, hey, in this situation, how would I like to be treated? How would I like to feel in this situation? And you can start to make your own assessments, and they're probably pretty darn accurate. What I think when we hear the word etiquette, or, you know, certainly when I, you know, think about it, I think about it as this endless book of rules, as opposed to the basic foundational elements of kindness and respect. So I think when you use the word etiquette, it's let's start with the golden rule, and then we can worry about, you know, the finer points about what to wear on a boat. We'll get there.
Absolutely. In terms of where people, their reaction when you say etiquette, and I'll give you my personal examples. Often people ask, if they've not met me before and we're sitting down at dinner, and they'll say, oh, so what do you do? I say, well, I'm involved in the training, and I'm an author on mastering the art of manners, etiquette. Immediately there's,
right. Let me get self-conscious now.
You notice a distinctive change in how they behave. I want to mention that etiquette and manners is not restrictive. It's nothing to do with wealth. Most people think, oh, that's very stuffy. Well, wait until I go to those type of restaurants, then I'll behave that way. It has absolutely nothing to do with that. I would like to stress two words. What is the situation and what is the environment that you're in? You need to be aware of those. And if you're aware of the situation and environment that you're in, then you will behave accordingly. Mm-hmm. And that is manners, whether it's to the host or to your other colleagues. If you walk into a restaurant and they only eat with their hands, for example, and you're going to say, well, no, I must insist on a particular manner. I want to be served in this way. You're being rather obtuse. Mm-hmm. You're being rather awkward, unnecessarily so. Etiquette is really not a barrier. You mentioned this, and I really would like to emphasize this point in a truly emphatic manner. Etiquette, manners, it's the lubricant to smooth the social interaction between people. It is supposed to be the basis between generations. It is also supposed to smooth, and it does, if applied in an open, courteous way, not only with generations, but the differential in wealth. So this concept where people think, oh, I have to behave in this way. Well, I'll wait till I've made enough money. That is a misconception.
Mm-hmm. Or they get it completely backwards. And this is really the basis for the comedy series, Rich versus Really Rich. It's that once I've made the money, now I can treat everyone like crap. Because I saw that on a movie somewhere, or I knew someone in my town and he ordered everyone around and he was the boss that just sort of barked orders. And now that I've made my, and I think what my series, which of course I was definitely not smart enough to think that this was the going to be the outcome from the series. But I think the series showed that there's another way to do it. There's another way to find success. And there's a way to find success that you're sharing with everyone. And in your attitude towards everyone, you're very kind and respectful, and keeping their interests and their needs in mind, no matter who it is. I believe that if you take those things into consideration, it's not, hey, manners and etiquette, that's just for the wealthy. I think manners and etiquette, when applied the right way, will have a wealth-generating effect, because yes. You're a heck of a great person to collaborate with if you're kind and respectful. More people want to work with you. Perhaps every time you walk into a restaurant and you're kind and courteous, you get the best table. Things just start happening for you, right? It's this magical knock-on effect of treating people the right way, that just starts with this funny word, etiquette.
I think we have to realize that we live in a world of 8 billion people. And of those 8 billion people, we live on 7 continents, broken up into 193 countries. You can't expect everybody to follow the same format.
Sure.
But in all of those instances, please, thank you, being kind. Now, I know the word respect is very well trodden. It seems to have worn out its gleam, but it really shouldn't. Because respect can be in many, many forms. But the most basic, we need to bring it up to the most basic. Once again, how would you like to be treated? And the way you are treated could well be different to somebody else. And that's where you have to realize, where are you? So Nicholas, you and I, let's say, for example, we're in India together, we're traveling. And I hope one day we have the opportunity to travel together to some country. In your custom, it would be, well, here we are, I'm going to shake hands with the Indian lady. Well, generally you wouldn't, because that's considered bad manners, even at business meetings, and they are there with their other partner. You wouldn't do that. You would perhaps just bow or put your two hands together and say namaste. So again, what is the situation you're in and what is the environment you're in? So apply what you know, what is courteous to you, and adapt it where you have to. That's what it really is all about. And with so many people and what's going on in the world, people's tempers get somewhat frayed. Their patience is somewhat short. The majority of people are going through very, very difficult times. So to offer that glimmer, that sense, I understand we're all going through this. Let's just be kind to one another and we'll get through it. Mm-hmm. Time heals all. Mm-hmm.
It's a strategy that perhaps could do more good than anything else.
Right? Yes.
And it's costless, right? So you don't need, there's no investment here that you need to make. There's no, special tool or whatever that you need to buy. You can just start today, mix in a little more kindness and respect into your day. Do you know why all the get rich quick books fail? They enforce a map that worked for the author that won't work for you. Why are you learning about digital ads when you'd prefer to set up a booth at a trade show and learn from customers face to face? Why are you reading about drop shipping when you're passionate about music? See what I'm saying? My book, The Entrepreneur's Field Guide, provides the tools for you to make your own map so you can feel more connected to your work, make money doing something you enjoy, and give back to the people you care about most. I wrote this field guide not only from my own life experience, but from interviewing top entrepreneurs weekly on my podcast. With the tools in the field guide, you simply can't fail. You'll learn about intelligent pivoting, or what I call iteration, why you already have a multi-million dollar idea in your head, and why you can ignore every hot market you think will make you money so you could focus on the things that you actually enjoy. Or as I like to say, it's not never give up. It's never give up iterating on things you like until something works. Get the Entrepreneur's Field Guide right now at nicholascrown.com. Okay, now back to the show.
I think what a lot of especially younger folks are curious about is, what's my toolkit? Because I want to be successful. I want to be in the same room as the deal makers. And yes. Once I get in that room, how do I not screw it up? What's the toolkit for the young entrepreneur? What's the toolkit for the young, you know, rock star banker, rock star lawyer?
Yeah. I was giving a talk yesterday to a group of business people, and a similar question came up. So it really depends on a number of factors. One of them would be the generation. What generation are you addressing? So if you were addressing a group, and I'm using 35 as the age group, as a sort of cutoff point. As we all know, there are changes in how one addresses individuals. But if they are 35 and younger, you know, are you going to go, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, only? You might be offending some people, and that's not something that you wanted to do. So you might go and address them as, good afternoon, everyone. But if you were perhaps addressing a group of an older generation, and you went to them and said, hi, guys,
right,
or hello, everyone, and they might feel somewhat offended. They might not. But I often think of the example where people walk into a restaurant and they're older, and the greeter says, hi, guys, how are you? I've known people who say, well, I'm not why is it hi, guys? I don't know you. Mm-hmm. And there's automatically this disconnect that happens. So number one would be generation. You want to be with the movers and shakers. It's not necessarily all the trappings. Do you need to have a fancy watch? Do you need to wear certain branded goods? Not necessarily. What you do need to do is allow your character to come up. What is the industry you're in? So if you're in banking, you're in insurance, you're selling perhaps high ticket items, these are people that are going to be purchasing hundreds and thousands, perhaps millions of dollars. Well, they are very particular. They want to know that the person that they're dealing with has not only all the technical skills, but they have all the other soft power that goes with it. And that comes in the terms of character. And one of the talks that I gave to was to a group of salespeople and investors. You need to understand who your audience is. And this is not the standard KYC, know your client. This is a situation of what are their priorities. So you need to understand them. So you can come dressed up. As I said, it doesn't necessarily have to be the latest branded suit or the watches beginning with an R or an O or, you know, or the...
Let's not get started on watches. We've got
all of those.
And that'll be a different podcast for another time.
But if you're dealing with a certain group, let's say mainly Asian, because you've got to understand the culture. They don't push their children out at the age of 18. They say, here you are, you're out. We've done our bit. Go and do what you need to do. It's not uncommon to have the Asian culture where the children are still living with the parents right up to the age of 30 or even to the point of before they get married. Mm-hmm. So any investments on that scale are generational. They are really for generational. So you need to understand that concept. What are their values? What would you need in order to be successful with them? Now, if you're dealing on a Western scale, and I'm sure perhaps maybe when you were 18, Nicholas, your parents said to you, well, Nicholas, we've done our bit. You're a man now. Stand on your 2 feet. Out of the house, or if you want to stay on, pay rent.
they very ceremoniously cut up my credit card in front of me. I was like, okay, back to work.
Yeah, but you know, there we are. So it really depends. You know, you want to be a mover and shaker, be honest to yourself, show kindness, be the person that you are. You don't need to be so aggressive that you lay waste and you use the von Clausewitz type of strategy that it's slash and burn. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are 8 billion people, but there's more than enough to share with one another. I've not met someone who says, well, I'd like to follow the sort of Genghis Khan or Attila the Hun strategy of dealing with people. Yeah, you might make money in the short term, but it's very short-lived and you need to live with yourself. So I think one really needs to extend courtesy.
I feel like there's a certain strategy when you're more junior, you're just getting started, when you want to reach out to someone.
Yep.
More years into the market, but perhaps just more success. Perhaps they're still your age. And I've seen it done, from my own DMs that I'm lucky enough to receive. I see it done the right way and I see it done the wrong way. The way that I've seen it done the right way, I think, is start with how can I help? Here's a unique way that I can help or something interesting that I do. So it's kind of a gift, starting with a gift. How would you approach someone that you wanted to meet, someone more successful? You know, you walk into an interview room, or perhaps you have to send that email, you know, that cold email to the director at the company that you want to work. What strategy would you use there?
With regard to, you know, how you want to deal, you're looking at that success, you want to climb the ladder of success. In this world, we get paid in two coins. One, when you're younger, it's called the experience coin. Mm. So try and gain as much experience as you can when you're younger. And when you get older, the second coin, that's money. Because you already have all the experience that you need. So if you were to look at it in those plain terms, I need experience and I need to earn money when I'm older. Obviously, some people's definition of old is somewhat different. When you're 20, 30 years old. When you're 30, 40 years old. But you will know yourself. And the other one I would recommend is exude something that the Japanese called ikigai. This is the way of life. So do something that you're good at, do something that you love, do something that people will want. And from that particular type of work, people will pay you for it. So if you can find that, everything you do is really an extension. It's not something false. It's not something constructed. Oh, what is the next way to do it? Should I send an email with a, hey, you know, I missed you at the last meeting. Or, hey, do you want to make X amount of dollars? This is a great opportunity for you. I think most people are bombarded with that. And getting back to that, it doesn't really work in Asia and even in Europe. I mean, let's think about it. You mentioned relationships all the time, and I congratulate you on that, because the world of business, whether two parties are doing business, it's always based on relationship. If you look at many Italian artisan businesses, the relationships that they have, and one business that comes to mind is Carrera Marble. I was once consulting for a particular group, and the one family, we'll call them Family A, all they were responsible for was to cut the marble. That's all they did. They would cut the marble, and then they would work with another family, Italian family, and all they would do would be to install and shine and work with the contractors. But what's unique is that generational togetherness that they've achieved is over generation. So other people trying to get into that, it would never work because it's generation. And the Italians are famed and respected for that. So it truly is relations. And that's why in many countries, perhaps not from North America, that's really important. You know, I think a couple of years ago, even now, there is a sort of mantra going around, you know, I want to make a relationship with you. You know, it's not just selling the product.
Right.
They're finally realizing, you know, you do have to make relationships. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that have been to countries on trade missions, they very, very rarely talk about the business on the first meeting, even the second. And this is where the culture comes in, Nicholas. So if we were in a meeting and we met for the first time, I'd say, oh, Nicholas, what's your handicap at golf? Are you married? Where do you live? What car do you drive? You might find, are you married? Are you single? Do you have children? Divorce? Mm-hmm. You might find that, whoa, that's a little right. too sensitive. That's my personal space. But they don't think so.
Right.
Because that's how they get to know you. And then if they like you, then they'll do business with you. So it comes in many ways. You know, it's not just a singular manner. And another one, if I could share with you, I was in Southeast Asia recently. I just came back. And the gentleman said, you know, do you play golf? I said, I do. I said, why do you ask? He said, because here we want to play golf with people because it's during the golf period that we can assess your character. I said, oh, tell me about that. They said, well, in the 5 hours that I'm with you, I can see how you behave, how you sit, how you react. You miss a shot. How do you react to that? If you take a certain style, are you more aggressive? Are you more risk averse? And I thought that's very interesting. So that's really the difference. Again, situation, environment. And so when you're young, take experience, watch, observe, and above all, learn. Be flexible. That's something I would suggest.
What I'm just realizing in my own life is the way that I hire the sort of Wall Street, you know, the summer analyst, the junior analyst, where we have this probationary period where we get to know each other, but it's within the work environment. And basically it's hire fast, fire fast. It's, hey, let's get to work. Let's get to work. And we know very, very quickly whether there's a fit or not. But what I'm seeing from the model that you're sharing, the golf, you know, the golf model is, it seems slow at first, but it's actually faster because it's only going to take me 5 hours to know whether or not I want to do business with you.
Brilliant. I mean, Nicholas, you know, if you're going to hire fast, and you might as well take all your three new hires and go and play golf with them.
I know. I'm replanning my summer as we speak right now. when we were sort of playing the game, and you were saying, you know, hey, are you married? Are you single? Or what kind of car do you? I even in that moment felt myself clamming up, imagining that being the first couple questions that someone was asking me, you know, a business partner or a strategic partner. I would just find that to be, you know, the way that I am in my business life is, let's get to the point. Let's get to the point. But what I've found is, and this is eye-opening, is sometimes you get to the point a little too fast and you make the wrong decision. You rush into a partnership, you hire someone too fast, and it's costly.
I mean, you're right. If you pursue and you make the wrong decision, it can be excruciatingly painful and expensive to extricate yourself. And I think it's really important for the younger generation, because you have to see what are the future trends. The future trend is there are two powerhouses coming out from the East. Right now, I as I said to you, I know of people, I've heard of interviews being conducted, not just on the golf course, but they will say, well, I'm meeting a group of you. Why don't you all come for lunch? And everybody goes to the lunch table.
Mm.
And while you think, oh, this is quite simple, they will be observing you, how you behave, perhaps how you order. And you may think, oh, this is only for those with money. No, it's not, because you're representative of that company. You know, how do you hold that glass of wine? Do you drink at all? Your napkin? Do you eat with your mouth full? Do you slurp? It all comes out. And this brings me back to the issue of connection. When you meet someone, whether you know it or not, but in the back of your mind and your brain movement, there's millions of electronic pulses going through. And this is natural, and it has been, you know, empirically studied. When people meet someone for the very first time, they're trying to find a connection. You know, sometimes, Nicholas, you've met a plethora of people, multitude. Some people you say, wow, I get on with him. I can talk to him or her. There are some people that they don't even need to open their mouth. And you're saying, I don't think I'm going to get on. You haven't spoken to them. You don't even know them. But there's that sense, because it's instinctive in us. We're looking for a connection. And if we find that connection, you have a better chance. So think about when you're eating. This person that you're wanting, that you're thinking of hiring, Nicholas, you were brought up in a way where you, you know, the way you use your knife and fork, you don't talk when you have food in your mouth. You know, you wipe your mouth before you take a sip of water or a sip of wine from your glass so you don't leave oil marks. That is what you expect. If someone wants to do exactly the opposite, it's instinctive. You're going to feel back and say, wow, that's, I can understand. But, you know, when it comes to the final selection, these all matter. So yes, situation, environment.
And it's one of my, you know, one of the examples that I kind of brought to the forefront, which I think is an old trick, is watch how, you know, the new hire speaks to the front desk attendant, how the new hire speaks to the custodian and maintenance staff on the way in, because all of this is a reflection of their character and their belief system. And it's critical, especially, you know, if they're representing you out in the field when you're not going to be there, right, on the road. I love the go back to you and say, how would you like to be treated? Because I think it takes a lot of the stress off. You can come to the conclusion pretty fast on your own, the best way forward when you're engaging with somebody else.
Another aspect is, you know, you asked at the beginning, or certainly one of your questions, excuse me, related to, I'm a young person, I'm a new hire, I want to be in the room with the movers and shakers. There are certain behaviors, certain aspects that they follow, and golf would be one of them. And the reason why is they use that as an assessment tool. Apart from that, obviously, there is the competitiveness. But one of the major aspects, which I find is perhaps not as hotly pursued as previous generations, is reading and having that broad range of knowledge. I understand that technology now, in fact, with technology now, it should be a lot easier. In the days of old, you would be going to the library, you'd take out a few, and you know, you'd be reading one or two books at one time. Now you've got audio books, now you've got summary books. You need to have at least a basic modicum of knowledge, whether it's classical music or art or different civilizations, a sense of history. It's not just the technical skills that they want. When you want to move ahead, you will notice, make your own observation. I would tell the viewers, make your own observation. It's not just wearing a t-shirt and saying, well, I've got so much money, I can do this and that. I can assure you, maybe you don't see it, but behind the scenes, they are doing their own reading, their own research. They appreciate different civilizations because they realize that in our lifetime, 60, 70 years, 80 years, it's a spit in the ocean of life. Hmm. We are just one half a thread in life's rich tapestry. So it's not just kill and brutalize and push people down so that you can just attain the top. You need to be compassionate, and you really need to be with people that are of the same ilk, that they show the same respect, the same behavior as you would want them to show you. And if you do that, you transform your whole life. Again, it's the ikigai. So it's pretty much resonating what you're saying, Nicholas.
I've written the word down, and the beauty of ikigai is it also encompasses, you care about this thing. It's not the thing that someone forced you to do. It's something that you love and have passion for, whatever it is. And that gives you you know, the extra motivation to explore and go deeper and refine your skills, where if it's, I'm doing this because, you know, my dad said I should be a lawyer or a doctor, and I'm just kind of phoning it in because I know I'll make this much money and I'll drive this car or whatever. That's not ikigai.
Yeah. Yes.
Ikigai is, well, no, this is the thing that I do uniquely well. I'm going to continue and focus and hone in on this. And thank God, because now you get to benefit from whatever it is that I'm doing.
Yeah. And I think if you start to appreciate more of the different cultures, coming back to that point, within the next 20 years, the major powerhouses are going to be coming out from the East. And if you don't understand their culture, how are you expecting, realistically, how do you expect to do business with them successfully? And I'm talking to the sort of 20, 30-year-olds now who are on their path. They want to create empires. They want to do something. By that time, 20 years, they'll be 40 and 50. That's the time. Mm-hmm. That's the time to create the empires. Now, obviously, if you're a much older generation, your senses, you want to perhaps not be so aggressive. You want to enjoy the fruits of all your hard work. Times change. You know, I mean, you've got 1.45 billion people in India. That is going to be the new power that's going to be coming up. China is there. You've got within that Southeast Asia region. And if you don't know their customs, how do you really expect? Do you expect them to come and learn your customs all the time? And believe me, they do. Think about how many people in that part of the world speak more than one language.
Sure.
Their own, plus English, maybe even three. And how many people in North America speak more than one language?
I think Americans are incapable of speaking another language. It goes deeper than just interest. We've been able to get away with being lazy. I think when you're in the economic lead, you get to hang tight and you say, you guys will speak my language eventually. And of course, we know that has happened.
I would say probably resting on their laurels. I mean, they have done an enormous amount, but times change.
And we know which direction it's headed. the writing is on the wall. Certainly to be aware of it, you know, as if you're operating in a global economy, which everyone is, whether they realize it or not, I'd push this now ahead of learning the language. I think you learn the customs and the etiquette, and then perhaps you can start to tackle the language. It's funny because, you know, when Spanish was the in vogue language in my education, so I learned Spanish. And one thing I just remember about the, you know, my middle school Spanish, my high school Spanish course had nothing to do with the culture. And I think we should learn the culture first, and then we could learn the language. I think we'd get a lot more out of that experience, certainly.
Yeah, they go hand in hand. And that's why, you know, through the institute that was created, the Asia Pacific Wine and Spirit Institute, all our programs have culture in them. Mm-hmm. So not only are you learning about the particular program, but there's culture in it. And it's through the language that you learn about how they deal with different generations. So certainly in the Japanese and even in the Chinese language, when you talk to someone, how you talk to them, and certainly I know the Indian language, when you speak to them, would you have a different way of addressing them based on their age. And another example would be how everything has been set. One thing I think we need to understand is culture, manners, etiquette, they go back ages and ages. They change, all right? They definitely change. Right now, we put our napkin on our lap. During the times of medieval England, they would have the napkin on the left shoulder because this was to stop the devil from imbibing evil spirits into their food. Yeah, so everything changes. Etiquette is not exclusive. That's one thing I want to share. Etiquette should never be considered to be, you eat like that? You expect me to do that? Well, I don't expect you to do that. I expect you to do it for yourself, because really what you're saying is, this is something I appreciate, and this is something that I would like to be treated.
I'm thinking about in my own personal life where I see the biggest lack of etiquette. And I think that this is on an airplane. Where would you place it, Dr. Lee? I feel like the airplane is where everyone just, all bets are off. You're looking up and down the aisle. People are playing, you know, loud music from their phone. They're eating a sandwich from the thing next. I mean, they need to watch your channel, Dr. Lee, everybody.
When you're on the airplane, it is different. It is different depending which country you're coming from. So we're talking about, the majority of people sit in a certain way, the armrest, you know, if you're sitting in the middle, where do you put your arms? Do you have both sides because you're in the middle? Some people believe that. I believe, ask, you know, you have neighbors, would you mind if I take the middle seat? And generally people will understand you're in the middle. You don't have the window. You don't have the aisle.
You've got nothing in the middle. You've got very little.
Yeah. I mean, I've observed and I've read people who say, don't take your shoes off, you know, or don't walk and make sure you don't have body odor. Well, I think that you wouldn't want to have someone sitting next to you with body odor. So why would you want to lay that on top of someone else? And if you are going to take your shoes off, I would assume you take your socks off as well, then at least bring a clean pair of socks.
Sure.
Just basic. I mean, there was one particular incident I read where a Korean lady had a 4-month old baby, I think 4 or 6 months, and she prepared some sweets and earplugs, and she sent a note to all the passengers, and she gave them all this little packet, which had, hi, my name is X. I'm 4 years old. This is my first trip. I'm a little bit worried, and I hope that my lungs don't cause you too much inconvenience. Wow. But here's something for you. And I thought, that's wonderful, isn't it? You know, so they're giving them earplugs and they're giving them some sweets. I mean, that is really very courteous, isn't it?
That's the most amazing thing I've ever heard. That's going to win. That's going to win for this week. I just flew from Miami. I'm in the studio in Chicago right now, and right. I was sitting in first class, and I don't always sit in first class. I feel like there's this conception that you always end up sitting in first class. I was sitting in first class, and first class was a family that had children running amok the entire flight. So, 3-hour flight, not the end of the world, but you know, I love to get work done when I'm up in the air. It's quiet time.
Right.
You know, I can write my newsletter. And I just thought, of course the children don't know that they're being annoying and rude. This has nothing to do with the children. It falls on the parents to say, hey guys, let's either sit still, or perhaps, you know, I don't know, let's go back here in the galley and run around until we get yelled at by the flight attendants. But I just thought, doesn't everyone just know in their heart that that's not the polite thing to do, to let your whole family harass the front of the plane? I suppose it doesn't really matter that I was in first class, really anywhere on the plane. It just,
no, it's not only just in whether it's first class or whether it's in coach or whether it's any situation. I think one should be cognizant, one should be accommodating. Yes, they are children, but as parents, you know, you need to be aware of, mm-hmm. of your environment. Yeah, I mean, yeah. The other thing in terms of on the airline, to me, it's one of the most clearest points of class differentiation, unfortunately. You know, you're in first class or you're in business class, you embark first and you disembark first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's that sort of
little privacy curtain.
A little privacy curtain that they uh-huh. have. It's made very obvious. And I think even more so, and the air hostesses, they do as best as they can. But I think if you are stuck in a somewhat confined area, I've had wonderful experiences where both, whether it's first or business or economy, and I do travel economy, sometimes deliberately, because I like to get the sense and feel, meeting so many different people from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. You know, these days, if you go into the business or the first, you're in a cubicle on your own, right. And you don't have that time.
Right.
So that once again brings up the question, should you be speaking to your neighbor all the time? Maybe they don't want to be disturbed. Ask them. But my late father shared these words of wisdom with me. He said, whenever you meet someone, always consider them to be a master of at least one thing that they can do better than you. And if they can do that, then just give them that respect. And if you use that principle, whoever you meet, you will have that.
And you don't need to make it up, because what your father told you, Dr. Lee, is 100% true. So you don't need to pretend, you know, that the person across from you in the aisle is great at something and is a master at whatever it is. It's true. We all have some magical skill, whether or not we're wielding it in the ikigai spirit or not. We all have something. And my belief that I just explore, you know, on social media is, if you're not exploring it, it could be fear. It could be some work that you need to do, but you are certainly not doing anyone a favor by not exploring your ikigai and your magical powers. I use an example. I shot a podcast recently, and I use an example of the baker. You want to go to a bakery where the baker loves bread and wanted their whole life to be a baker.
Yes.
You don't want to go to a bakery where someone said, you have to be a baker because this is the safe route to make $100,000 a year, you know, and the baker's sitting there and saying, well, I'll just, you know, I'll do the bare minimum and put the bread out, but I really wish, you know, I could be a rock star. You really get the most out of society when everyone's doing the thing that they love.
I think when many people, just coming back to this etiquette and manners, they think it's antiquated. They think that it is compartmentalized in the sense that if you don't follow this, you're pushed out. That's just the way life is in many ways. If you are expected to go to the theater, you're not going to go and flip flops and a tank top. They won't allow you in. You can go to certain tourist sites, whether it's a church or whether it's a monument in Europe. Certainly the Vatican, they don't allow you to walk in unless you're appropriately dressed. So if you were to take that as an extension, then how do you behave? Do you behave what is expected? I mean, let's just take a very unusual, and I'm not saying it's people are not like that, but if you were an investor, you had several hard-earned dollars that you wanted to invest, mm-hmm. and your private banker wore a t-shirt, pierced nose, earrings, and I say this with the greatest of respect for those who do that, and then tattoos or all over their face and neck, I don't know if that person would instill the type of confidence that you would want, as opposed to someone who is wearing the more traditional.
Right.
Or if you were to meet a doctor who had an apron that looked as if he'd just been spending a couple of hours at the butchery, you know, chopping up the meat. Mm-hmm. And that's how they met you. I mean, there are certain conceptions that we have that have been ingrained in us, and we need to be aware of them. And some of them change with time. That's all I'm saying. And that's what, when I give out these particular masterclasses, there's many salespeople now that are coming to me and say, oh, I learned this in the spin training. I learned this. I've got to get my CRM all put together. I want to be there. They're losing the fundamentals.
We were sort of talking about education and reading and develop perspective. And on one hand, we're less likely to head down and pick up a book or pick up a few books. But I think content like yours, Dr. Lee, allows a lot younger generations with that limited attention span. I'm right on the cusp, so you know, I'm not totally out of it, out of the crosshairs here. But I think it allows a wider audience to pick up this and start to think about it in these really nice, short, educational videos. And you don't have to read the book. Dr. Lee did the work for you. So I want to thank you for coming on, Dr. Lee. This was a rare pleasure. And where can folks go in and find you?
Well, they can certainly find us on social media, on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We also have our website, apwasi.com. And although you can see through my videos the short bits, but there is a book that will be coming out. It's called Master the Art of Manners.
Mm.
And it is broken up into very short but practical and succinct situations that you might find yourself in. So you can always just flip through and say, oh, this is what I need. You don't have to read the whole book in its entirety, but it can always be a reference manual for you.
That's
so
awesome.
Thank you very much for that.
No, that's
been
that
a pleasure
sounds
being on the show, Nicholas.
That sounds excellent. And thanks again for meeting me, and hopefully we do this in person next time.
I definitely look forward to that, and I hope we get to meet each other in
Absolutely.
Person one day, Nicholas.
Absolutely. Likewise.